único.
National Department of Tourism, you are welcome as well. Honorable members, the purpose of this meeting for today, we will be getting the presentation from the AG, from the FFC. We also wanted to get another presentation from the National Treasury. The AG, we wanted them to talk about the audit outcome of the department and the entity for 2013-2014. The FFC, we want them to talk on the tourism recommendation. And the National Treasury, we wanted them their focus to be on the spending trend. Spending patterns of the department. Unfortunately, they declined, so we've got only two institutions that will be presenting today. Then before that, I just want to also indicate to members that we've got a couple of apologies with us. The secretary has apologized. Ms. Mash. Le Makubela has also apologized. Mr. Begwa has apologized because he is sick. I am told the Honorable Craig is attending another workshop on transport. So before we start, to honorable members, I would just want to ask the honorable members so that we can appoint an acting chair who will preside over this meeting of today's honorable members.
Sorry, Jim, I'll just ask you a question, just to go back before you do the chairperson addition. The department that declined, what is the reason for them declining?
It's not our department, National Department of Tourism, it's the National Treasury. We asked them, because we wanted to be part of today's meeting. Their argument was that all their senior officials are very busy with the preparation of the medium-term budget policy statement, which I understand on the 23rd of October. So mainly that was the reason that they said they apologized to the chairperson that they will not be able to make it to this meeting. Basically, that's what they said, Mr. Fon. But fortunately, the FFC, they are here, and the National the AGE's office, they are here. Honorable
AGE? Okay, Secretary. You already mentioned apologies. Are we already on apologies? On the program that you were first going to elect the acting chairperson and then apology. I might as well then just say that I'm also one of our primary committees of energy, and that much discussed nuclear deal is being discussed today, and they're going to hear from ESME because I would like to make a contribution in that committee as well. So I will be leaving and come back then again. So I will be leaving this committee to go there for a contribution.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Edith. Thank you for putting that up front. Master Helen?
Thank you.
Can you use your mic?
Okay, can we?
Okay, thank you. It's a pity that we have so many apologies, but because we are just going to be receiving the presentations and the department are here, or the office of AG is here to do it, we should just go on. I was suggesting Honorable Adams to act as a chair for today. Okay. Thank you, Ma'am Masahele. There's a request, honorable members. Can I have the seconder? Okay. Mr. Boss, the seconder. Ma'am, madam, you have been elected as the acting chair. Can you please come forward and occupy your seat?
For the trust in me. I hope I don't disappoint you. Thank you very, very much. We have an agenda in front of us, and this is the first time that we engage with the AG and the SEC as a committee. I would like us, first of all, the honorable members to introduce themselves, and then the delegation of the AG, and then the delegation of the SEC in that order. Myself, I'm Patricia Adams, and I'm from the ANC, and I'm a member of the Popular Committee on Tourism. I'm from the Northern Cape, as you can hear from my pronunciation. To my left, go this way, honorable member, please.
I'm Manuku Masahela, a member of this committee of tourism from Limpopo Province. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Greg Kabak. I'm also a member of the Tourism Committee and from the Democratic Party.
Morning, my name is James Force, DA spokesperson of tourism, and I'm from the Western Cape.
Good morning, my name is Andrew Whitfield. I'm a DA member of this portfolio committee from the Eastern Cape.
My name is Eddie Esther from the Gata Freedom Party and from Gauteng.
My name is
I'm Charlie Ngote, the business executive for the tourism portfolio in the office of the Auditor General.
Good morning, I'm Marianne Whitford, and I'm the senior manager responsible for the tourism portfolio.
George Wolfhard, manager responsible for the tourism.
My name is Ramos Mabugo. I am the head of the Budget Recommendation Program at the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
Good morning. I'm Corey Tao, Program Manager of the Fiscal Commission.
It looks like I'm sitting on the wrong side. My name is Prokoza. I am the member of the committee from ERF. I am from Puma. Yes, my best appearance. Unfortunately, when I was put into this portfolio committee, I got fixed for quite some time. It's my first appearance today. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Gabriel Makika, also from the Auditor General in the Parliamentary Office in Cape Town.
Committee Chairperson, members, Ralph Ackerman, Ackerman with National Department of Tourism.
Morning, Chair members. My name is Nula Mabel from the Department of Tourism. My name is Sodra Kako, Honorable Member of the Union. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. My name is Derek Walton. I'm the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Sibutu Fokuzwayo, the Portfolio Advisor for the Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Sibutu Fokuzwayo. I'm the Research of the Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Sharma Nata, I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for Minister.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Pietra Sanida, Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Director General of Tourism.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Simbasi Clarkford, Executive Secretary for the Chairperson of this committee. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. Ismail Hussain from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you. Now, this is Mike Chavez. We are going back to the program. I'd like to thank you all the members of our program. And you are free to join us for the registration or you can go to the agency. But thank you. We need to go over to the office of the Policy Agenda before you start.
And there's something remarkable in here. It says, and I need it, I hope all honorable members have one of these. And I'll ask Jay to distribute it to you. The Department of Tourism was recognized for its clean audit achievement at an award ceremony for six entities in Linwood, Pretoria this morning. And I think this morning was the 8th of October, 2014. And the clean audit awards were handed over by the Auditor General to 13 out of 41 audited state entities for the 2013-14 financial year. But tourism was the only national department to receive the award. And as the National Department of Tourism is present, I would like to congratulate you. But leader of the Auditor General's Office, I would like you to share with us the rationale of the award to the National Department of Tourism before you begin with your presentation.
Thanks, Chair. As you rightfully said, I think in our portfolio we audited a total of 41 entities and departments, only two departments that got the clean award, and about 11 entities out of that. And that only speaks to the portfolio of National B. So our portfolio comprises of the finance portfolio, which is National Treasury and all the other entities, the transport portfolio, international relations portfolio, as well as Test South Africa. The purpose of handing over these awards is to encourage the clean administration in the public sector. And by having these kind of awards being given out to whoever came out tops when it comes to passing the test in terms of our audit and becoming clean, we see a lot of our audits showing an interest in taking us up on getting to the clean audit award. And in doing so, there's a lot of involvement with them where they ask us for what are the technical things that they have to do in order to move to the space of the clean audit. And there's been an appreciation in the portfolio that we have of what it means to be clean. for some of the entities that we had cleaned, we even had representation from the chairs of the boards who attended them, just to show what it means for them. And one statement made by the chair of one of the entities was that them as a board, in terms of their meetings and the deliberations they normally have with management, is that they clean one of the top agendas in the meeting, and it means a lot if they have to keep winning the awards. So it's just a question of saying, keep up the good work, and if you still have some work to do, you can learn from those who actually achieved the award, and it's actually achievable.
And I would like to throw the challenge to National Department of Tourism. Next year this time, we would like to congratulate you again for the second consecutive year of a clean audit. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Jen. Chair, we'll be taking the honourable members through two documents. One is called the Portfolio Committee Briefing Note, which looks like this. However, we go to be projecting a document which looks like this. So this document is actually a snapshot of this one. We'll have a picture projected, and we'll be talking to that picture using the title of the document. Therefore, my colleague will talk to the pictures that are going to be appearing on the presentation, referring you to the pages in this document. And at this stage, I hand over to Merida to kick off with the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Tammy and Honourable Members.
So indeed, to begin, we are unfortunately time constrained. So we'll give you an hour for your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope to be able to be involved in the time constraints. As Tanya has indicated, we've got two documents in front of us. I'll be looking at, or we'll be projecting basically the one that's on the slide. We'll be looking at the audit outcomes for the financial year in the 2013-14. We'll look at the next slide. This is basically our reputation promise, which I'm sure members have had in other presentations, but I think I'd just like to dwell a little bit on it again to say that basically what we are really here is we're wanting to strengthen the country's democracy to enable other types of accountability and governance through our auditing and in building public confidence. And I think that talks exactly to what Amy was indicating about the clean audits, where we actually are enabling the general public to be able to trust the departments and the entities with the use of the monies that are being spent. Basically, the purpose of the presentation on the next slide is really to provide you with information at a glance on the audit outcomes, and then obviously we'll take more detailed questions should you want them a little bit later. If we look at the next slide, which is the outcomes of the portfolio as such, on the other document, I don't know whether you want to go through it simultaneously, but it's not necessarily necessary. On point number two, we also talk about what were the audit outcomes, and I'll also to give an indication of what were the audit outcomes in the previous year. If you look at the audit outcomes, we look at areas in terms of the financial statement, we look at compliance with laws and regulations, and we look at the performance reporting. In terms of financial statements, you'll notice that both the department and staff obtained unqualified audit reports. Under compliance with laws and regulations, you'll notice that the department is the one that's indicated as green, and the one that's indicated as red is South African Tourism. And the non-compliance that we look at there is we look at material misstatements, financial statements, as well as non-compliance with supply chain management and other regulatory problems that we experience. In this instance, South African Tourism's non-compliance related to deviations in the supply chain management, but I'll get into the detail a little bit further in the document. As far as the performance reports are concerned, this snapshot will look different to one when I go to the Apple focus areas. in our audit report, we actually mention certain things under other matters where we really draw a conclusion on the usefulness and reliability of the information that's provided as the performance information. And those two areas, we found no problems with either the department or South African tourism. Moving on, also if I could just say what happened last year is the department had non-compliance matters that we reported on, and South African tourism was actually the entity that got the team audit. So the regression, there was a regression in the current year relating to the supply chain. Just the outcomes of the portfolio as well, when we look at our assurance levels, this is on a very high level that we look at, as we're saying, as senior management level. We're looking at it, and if you look at the graph at the bottom, it provides some assurance. When we're looking at this, we really, it really talks to the predetermined objectives side of where our concerns are really being raised, and I will get to that a little bit later so that you can understand our concerns. With the accounting office and accounting authority, we're looking at obviously in the green, it's where the DG came through with the clean audit. On the SAT side, we got the yellow because we had one area that actually impacted on the audit report. Executive authority there, we can say, even though you'll notice that there's a yellow arrow, a horizontal yellow arrow on the one side saying that it's not changed, green is the best colour to go with, and we found that our interactions with the executive authority have always been very, very positive and fruitful, and we meet with him on a quarterly basis, and even with the new minister that's come in, we've already had our third interaction. So I think from there we can really say that the interactions are positive, and the ministers are driven towards also the clean administration. In internal audit, in both departments, we have found that we really can rely on their assistance in providing assurance to the audit committees and to management. The audit committees, again, there we feel that they do provide us with assurance, and they provide the entity and themselves with assurance. And the portfolio committee, we've also had very positive interaction with the previous portfolio committee, and going forward we anticipate an executive officer and assistance from your side. Then the audit outcomes of the portfolio, which looks very, very colourful, this really talks to the diagram where we actually, I just want to try and see if I can see it in our document. It's basically point four in the briefing document, which says what are we driving for the drivers of internal control. The document actually talks to each other here. And when we look at it, what the Auditor General, in the process when we were starting to commence on the clean audit initiative, we identified areas that we did that if the departments and entities focus on these areas and put controls in place surrounding these areas, the outcome should be a positive outcome, and would see entities and departments coming through unqualified audit reports with no funding. The areas, you'll notice that there's quite a few of the areas are basically green, where it says that they have been doing, and we've assessed them as being effective in those areas. The areas where we do have problems is when you look at leadership, we're looking at the policies and procedures and action plans. And basically, these areas that you're looking at relate really to the impact of the IT control environment, where we had findings and the policies and procedures weren't necessarily always updated in time, and they might have been missing certain aspects. It didn't mean there was a total breakdown, but it's areas for improvement. And they didn't impact the outcome of the unqualified audit report. Now, I think just in terms of if you look at the columns, you'll see we talked to financial statements, we talked to performance reporting, and we talked to compliance with laws and regulations. And under performance reporting, you'll notice that we've got a couple of areas where you'll notice the two, where it's two, it's ethics department and the entity that we identified areas of improvement that they're going to put in action plans in place. And the performance information, we did find problems, and when I talk about the focus areas, we'll look at that. Some of the problems really are underpinned by the IT system in some of the areas to support it, and then just IT controls which could hamper the financial impact. It could have an impact that didn't currently have an impact. Then looking at the audit action plan, they're indicating that with the compliance with laws and regulations, the one that's indicated, the one is really relating to the entity fact where we have a problem with the supply chain management. And then if we look at the area that I've been saying I'll be looking at for a long time now, is the outcomes of the portfolio where we're looking at the risk areas. And these are areas that we've also focused on in our audit. We do specific audit procedures and we look at these to ensure that there's compliance regarding this. The quality of the submitted financial statements here in both instances with the department as well as South African Tourism, we did not have any material adjustments that were required to the financial statements that were submitted to us for audit. So the errors that were noted were not material, and we didn't have to have a non-compliance matter related to this, and I think that that's something very, very positive. When we look at the submission and the quality of the performance report, here we saw a regression in both the department and the entity in terms of the outcome that we had at that point. If we look at the department side of it, it really related to the one area where it's the training initiatives that take place in one of the programs, and basically this is in domestic tourism that you're looking at and where they need to get information from external providers to quantify the numbers of entity of people that are being trained. And basically what we found is that the support information that we got eventually from the service provider did not tie up to the what it had originally been given to us. There were reasons and rationale behind it in the fact that they received the audited figures later after we'd already received the document, and they've now put processes in place to actually address it, and that was one of our recommendations to them to make sure that they get the information on time. So that's an area that I think can be fixed. Then in terms of the South African tourism, we had a problem with a grading establishment where the numbers didn't tie up as to the numbers that were indicated as being graded establishments and those that were indicated as not being graded establishments. There were certain criteria. I mean, we applied the criteria to the South Sandai, so we didn't get the same answer. So they are putting measures in place as well to address that. And then we also had another instance where they were reliant on information from of statistical nature, and this information was incorrect. So what they originally only reported on was on 3 quarters, where they should have still reported on the 4th quarter and provided the information to say why they couldn't report on the 4th quarter. So that was also corrected, and that led to the misstatements that needed to be corrected, but that didn't have an impact on whether you were clean or not clean. So I'd like to just make sure that that is clear. Then in terms of the supply chain management, the department there didn't have any matters that were raised. In South African tourism, we had an issue with one of the contracts where there was a deviation, where they went out and they did a closed bid. We felt that the rationale given behind it wasn't adequate, and they could have done other measures to address it, as well as the fact that there was a relationship between the supplier and one of the officials, and we felt that the official should have recused himself from the process. So those are the two areas in the SACOM that was problematic. If they address those sort of areas going forward, we shouldn't have a problem. In terms of the financial health, although it is green here and we're putting it as green, you'll notice later Tammy will take you through the documents as well. and where we ask for your assistance as well. There are areas with South African tourism where you're looking at the funding of them in the foreign currencies, which is putting a lot of strain on them. And I'm sure that you've already been made well aware of it by the department and South African tourism, so that is of concern to us. Just also, if I can say, if you're looking at the real detail of this information to get the actual findings that we raised, and I'm trying to summarize it as short as possible, they would be under point 3. So you'd be looking at supply chain management, which is 3.1 in that briefing document. 3.2 is the predetermined objectives. And then we're looking at information technology, which is the one that I'll be dealing with now, which is 3.3, and then also the human resource problem. The human resources, you'll notice that we don't have any matters there. We also didn't raise anything in our audit report relating to the human resources because they their vacancies are not at a point. We didn't have any major findings relating to that. Just in terms of the information technology, and this is where sometimes the jargon that gets used is a bit difficult in terms of, you know, unless you're very IT orientated, actually go through all the details. But if you, to summarize what the basic problems were with the department, I'm going to just turn to one of my other documents here, is that there was a lack of management out of sight in the IT security documentation, which was not adequately designed and did not indicate all the security configurations implemented on the server and operating system. So this is, again, this is a shortcoming where something wasn't completely documented. So it didn't lead to a total breakdown or whatever, but it was requirement that the documentation needs to be there and the policy needs to include all the documentation. Then we have the EDNS system, which is the electronic document management system. There's a problem relating to this in the fact that they had an agreement with CETA, where CETA could not provide the services, and there's a patch management, so that when there's any updates to the system, that they then come and patch the system, and it hadn't happened. So basically what happened at one point, the system didn't function the way it was when it was switched off for moving the system, and then they did lose a bit of information, but they were able to recapture all that information, so it didn't impact our audit at all. But subsequent to that, they had taken back the control within the department itself. So that was something that happened that did have an impact, but it was also something that was in the hands of a supplier. But we obviously still raised it because of the concern. Then in the lack of management of oversight, in the user control management and the policy being inadequate, as it lacked the key control elements required to guide management of the user accounts on the EDMS system, and also user accounts that were dormant back on the system that should have been removed. So it's really relating a lot to policies and documentation that should be able to guide them through the process. Then if we look at the staff side of it, they had resource constraints within their ICT department, and the documentation, again, and the systems review of the database and audit logs weren't done as regularly as what they should have been. There were also the configuration of the password parameters. We all know that we need to have certain things in passwords. Those could be improved. The IT security policy on the firewall was not aligned to the change management policy, so it's again things that needed to be aligned. The firewall policy also didn't require the firewall configurations to be reviewed when the other new services were installed, which is also a problem because those sort of things should be done. And then the direct use of the root command. Now, basically the root command is the original start-up of a elements when you start programming into the computer language, basically. And this was not disabled, so there were other people could have got access to it and actually changed it. But that is subsequently also, you know, I'm trying to put it in plain and simple language so that you've got the technical way that we actually put it in, but that's really to put it in the jargon. But if we look at that document as well, You'll notice that we say what the entry is, the filing, if we're looking at the billing document, we're looking at the root cause and in detail, and then you're looking at the recommendation. So it's basically this document that will give you a lot more detail. But if we continue with the one on the one that's now on this, if you can go to the next one, George, thank you very much. You'll see that I've really summarized them to be very short, very sweet, so that you can get the gist of what is contained in those detail columns. Is the most common route is we're saying there's close response management. Again, we're talking to the areas where we found the problems, and that is the AOPIs, which is the predefined objectives, as well as looking at the IT areas. So there are areas for improvement. And then looking at the lack of consequence or poor performance and transgressions, we're also looking at that as the one audit team that's really relating to the supply chain area. So I think that in terms of those, because looking at the areas where there were regressions, and the regressions were really relating to supply chain and then also to the AOPI in both of both this department and the entity, although it didn't impact the unqualified opinion. Then if we look at the audit outcomes of the portfolio, we've had interactions with the minister, and that is with the current minister as well. And you'll notice that we got the blocks and they've got different colouring at the bottom. You'll see that if it's blocked off by green, it means we've already implemented it. Where it is black, it's new commitments. Where it's yellow, it's in progress. So I think that if we could just start off with the ones that have been implemented. We have continuous interaction with the minister, and these are given priority. What we notice from the ministerial peers diary to be able to see us, and that's something that we find very commendable. Then the implementation of controls to monitor the reconciliation and the information for the preparation of disclosure notes. That was a problem in the past where we had problems with disclosure notes. We don't have that problem. That's why we're sitting with an unqualified audit report. When we look at the ones that are in progress, we're saying SAT committed to getting feedback on the foreign currency impact on the operations. That is something that is a long-term thing that needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency. Then I think that the areas that were raised with the new minister, which he indicated he would be prioritising, is the follow-up on the control being implemented by management of both the department and that to address the misstatements in the predetermined objectives. And then also the follow-up of the action plans to address the IT findings. So I think that just from that side, you can see that the commitments, you know, there is a, when we do address something, it does get impacted and removed immediately. So I think that that's something positive. I'll now hand over to Tammy to take you through some of the slides in, from now on. Thank you.
Chair, in the interest of time, I'll just browse through some of the slides, but then I'll like to put the focus on the last slide. And just to start with the oversight model that is actually designed, it talks to how do we provide the required assurance as the NGSA. And if you look at the slide in front of us, it talks to the policy development as well as the strategic planning, which eventually flows into operational planning and budgeting, the implementation of media monitoring and recording, and it talks to the year-end recording and the accountability where you talk about assessing and adjusting those. And all of this happens on a continuous basis. And this is the home of our oversight, which you normally talk about when you talk to the issues of how the institution and planning strategically to move forward and how does that refine the operational requirements on like the day-to-day operations. Then in the next lecture, I'm not going to waste time on that. Here, this slide we just put in, the just to show the understanding of what the oversight component of the portfolio committee mandate is. But I'd like to provide a view of what we wanted to provide as input into what we think that should be the consideration for the portfolio committee when dealing with performance monitoring. This is not to say that we're telling the portfolio committee what to do, but it's just giving a view of what we think. If it can be done, we might actually see a change, we might see a change in the positive direction in terms of what auditor plans look like. And the first issue that you find there is the issue of looking at whether the strategic plan of the entity and the department is actually aligned to their APPs. And if that can be done, it generally talks to the National Development Plan, because that's what is running under the current environment and under the current regime of the government. But the next issue to identify is to ensure that the entity does have adequate resources. It doesn't help to have a strategic plan and a management plan, but you need the resources of driving it. How are you going to be able to achieve all those objectives? And then the next issue that needs to be looked at is the issue of the targets. Are those targets realistic? It doesn't help taking a plan for the sake of ticking a box, because it talks very far. You need to do something that will be of value. Putting a document for the sake of just complying with the requirement is not going to assist anyone. Then the other thing that needs to be monitored, Chair, is how are the entity ensuring that the strategic plan and not performance plan will be achieved? So in other words, do they have internal control processes in place, like your performance contracts, your quarterly monitoring, etc.? Are those things in place? How are they prepared? Who prepares that? Are those things tabled at the committee so that the committee can exercise the required oversight in terms of monitoring and review of those quarterly progress report? Then the other thing that we mentioned is the committee reviewing the annual achievement of predetermined objectives by the entities, and this talks to the annual reports. And the last one talks to if the committee has reviewed and approved the changes to the strategic plan that the committee has actually proposed, it should be tracked on whether it has been done. By the time you sit in committees, you find that the committee has made those recommendations, and later on when you sit, you get the final document. And you think about the meetings that we've attended with the committee, and that some of them actually fell within the track. But it is a way of tracking those recommendations so that at the end of the day, whatever the committee has recommended is actually rejected. The next slide, which is the slide on the support oversight, which is the complementary mandate. Here we're talking about the combined assurance model, and this slide talks directly to slide number 5, where we're talking about levels of assurance that we actually get in. And this is where we're saying the level of assurance in terms of all the documents that we're getting is management. Senior management accounting officers and the executive authority, that's in the first level, and they will define what is exactly that they need to do to ensure that the information that they provide to auditors, the information that they report on, is credible, and that information only come in with auditors. We do not find any significant or material items that leads to modified audit opinion. Then the second level of assurance talks to the coordinating monitoring institution, internal audit and audit committee. Then that means the last level, which is the independent assurance provider, which is the third level. It talks to the portfolio committee, the public accounts committee, the national assembly, and it talks to us as the office of the auditor general as well. That way we now can assess independent of the internal control processes whether what is being reported is actually in line with all the reporting requirements that are there. So we're just outlining some of the key things that needs to be done by each of those levels of assurance providers. Then in the next slide, there is just a graph which depicts the view of how the clean administration improves its delivery, and it all starts with the robust financial performance management systems. Once you have those in place, it also takes commitment and ethical behavior by those who are responsible for running the entities and departments. In addition to that, it takes proper oversight and accountability for all to ensure that those robust financial performance management systems are adequately functioning and they provide the required information. Then there's a problem in the middle which talks to the independent and relevant reporting by the EC, talks to the issue of the following whether there is clean administration or not. So that is a view of how we think this issue of improvement delivery can be attained. In the next slide, here we just highlighting the issue of the question which is posed by some of the role players in government in terms of accountability and certain things like those. And just giving a view of some of these questions, not just the question on this slide alone, a number of questions can be answered. There is a booklet. I don't know whether the members have got that booklet, but if not, we can arrange with Kabel so that they can provide a lot of those booklets to the members. So it talks to some of the issues of how do you hold people accountable, how do you make sure that things are done, especially when the things are not moving in the right direction. Okay. Kabel, please make it.
Thank you, sir.
Then in the next slide, this slide just highlights what is contained in that book, and it talks to the issue of reporting, it talks to the issue of failure to comply with legislative obligations and authorize the regular purpose of full spending and possible fraud and corruption, poor performance, and other non-compliance legislation. So there's a lot that the booklet gives in terms of what is it that should be done to avoid that kind of situation. If it is okay, how then should it be dealt with going forward to give the process up? Then so the last slide talks to the issue of the commitments, which we feel that if the committee can assist us, we will be able to actually attain the situation of getting a clean audit for both the FECT and the department. The department has got a clean audit, but I think the significant challenge is once you are there, once you are clean, it's about maintaining. So FECT has still got a movement to make, which is moving one way up, which is moving to the clean. But the department has got no movement if it becomes well, it's just a matter of how to maintain. So the committee can assist us in just having both plans by the department and the NGO in terms of how do they address the issues that my colleague has been speaking about in order to maintain or improve so that the audit outcomes. And then the other page talks to some of the areas which were raised by the members in the previous committee, and those I'm not going to repeat. We just put them there in the slide, but as and when the engagement and the deliberations came on, members need to remember that these are the things that actually raised which you need to follow up on. And I think for that note, Chair, we just perhaps with your permission, open the floor for any questions, and then if you still have time, we can address those questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you to the team of the Auditor General. I think we should go over now to where we will have the questions. We'll first have a presentation by the APC, and then we'll have a short break, and then we'll go to the questions. Is that in order? Okay. So we'll hand over to the APC. Thank you.
Let me start off by
introducing the Financial and Fiscal Commission to this particular portfolio committee, I agree with you, Chairperson, that this is the first time that we are interacting with the committee, at least in the fifth administration, so we do need to share a little bit on what the commission is and what its mandate is about. So I put one slide here that I will speak to, and then I will then hand over to Mr. Dawood here, who is our program manager for budget analysis, and then Dr. Ramos Mapuku will speak at the end to the recommendations that we have made that have a bearing on the tourism department. Now, the Financial and Fiscal Commission is a permanent statutory body that is established established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution. It's one of those institutions that are called Chapter 9 and associated bodies. I think now the name is called Institution Supporting Democracy. We are an independent commission which is subject only to the law. We report to Parliament. We must function in terms of national legislation, and that legislation is the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act of 1997, amended in 2003. The purpose or the mandate of the Commission is to make recommendations and visits in Chapter 13 of the Constitution or in national legislation to Parliament, provincial legislatures, and any other organ of state determined by national legislation. Now, I think it's important to emphasize the primary target of the Commission's recommendation is Parliament. And so when we make a recommendation, we are actually making recommendations that should empower the Parliament to engage with the executive in terms of how the provision of revenue has responded to the constitutional mandate and policy imperative for the different tiers of government and also for the different organs of state. So I'm not sure. So what I'm saying, is that it is important that when we engage with the recommendations of the Financial and Fiscal Commission and whether or not they have been implemented, that engagement is supposed to be between Parliament and the Executive. Our purpose is to make recommendations that ensure that each sphere of government receives a fair share of the nationally collected revenue, and also each organ of state receives a fair share to enable to deliver on its mandate. Now that is quite important from our side. Now the recommendations will relate to the division of revenue, the official division of revenue across the three spheres of government and between the spheres of government. The first recommendation will also the recommendation of any financial or fiscal measure that the Commission can deem to be relevant to its work, and also that the Commission can be requested by an organ of state to present. So, for example, if the Department of Tourism wants us to work on something, they can write to the Commission and they can look at this and give us advice. Similarly, if the portfolio committee would like us to work on something, they can write to us and say, can you please do this? This is a specific matter that we'd like the commission to provide advice to Parliament. So we are mandated or obligated to respond to those requests from organs of state. Now, importantly also, is that legislative provisions or executive decisions that affect either provincial or local government from a financial or a fiscal perspective need to be consulted with the Commission. Quite a number of decisions that are taken that impact on different spheres of government, taken at a national level, but then impact on provinces or municipalities, such as regulations around the environment or regulations around things. Those do have an impact, and they create money on the funding side for the different spheres of government that have not necessarily been responsible for taking those decisions. Now, it's important that when such decisions are taken, they are then consulted with the Commission so that the Commission can make a recommendation on how the financial and fiscal implications are then mitigated. Now, in terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act, if the Financial and Fiscal Commission has not been consulted in those types of decisions or processes, then those decisions or processes have no legal standing in law, so they are basically illegal. In other words, any organ of state can refuse to say to actually carry out that function in terms of the FSC Act. So it's quite important that, especially in areas where there's concurrency among the three spheres of government, when decisions or regulations are being made, it's always important to double check that the financial and fiscal implications have been taken into account. I mean, I've met on quite a number of occasions with some of these laws that they said, and then when you look at the explanatory memorandum, there's a section that says financial and fiscal implications, it says none. And then you ask yourself a question, but how does somebody set up an office to deal with this when there are no financial and fiscal implications? And so those things are actually quite real, and the Commission can basically have it established to actually fill in those gaps. So the consultation is the end of Section 3 of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act. Now, to just say a bit about the Commission itself, the Commission consists of 9 members. The 2 are local government nominees, 3 are provincial government nominees, and the balance, which is 4, are national government nominees. The appointments are made by the president in consultation with the Minister of Finance. The Commission has got a secretariat, which is what these 2 gentlemen that I'm with here today basically work for. The secretariat sits in our mid-range office in Johannesburg. And we also have an office here in Cape Town, which we have recently staffed with the budget analyst. This is where Mr. Dawood here works, so that when Parliament requests very quick information around the budgets or an analysis around budget, then we can be able to respond immediately. So we have established capacity in the Cape Town office, which was originally meant to be that Parliament liaison with the Commission. But so the full-time commissioners is just the chairperson and the deputy chairperson. And then the rest of them are chairperson, let me stop there on the Financial and Fiscal Commission and hand over to Mr. Dawood to take you through some of the issues that we have picked up on the Department of Tourism.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. Just to look at the macroeconomic and fiscal outlook, shows the importance of tourism growth in relation to the economy in South Africa as well as abroad. What we have noticed is that global growth forecasts for both 2014 and 2015 were revised downwards by 0.1% for 2014 and 0.2%. In its October outlook. Now, this could have an impact on international arrivals given how sensitive global growth is to tourists arriving from Sri Lanka. In terms of the African domestic economy, also it's been down in regions and in the order of 0.3% for 2014 and 0.4% for 2017. So we can see that from a global perspective as well as from a domestic perspective, economic growth forecasts have actually been down. And this could have a negative impact on the tourism sector in South Africa. Now looking at some of the tourism trends and here, one of the, there are two important goals that tourism sector aims to achieve. One is increasing its contribution to GDP, and the other one is creating jobs for employees in the tourism sector. And when we look at the total contribution of GDP in the tourism sector in 2013, we did that it contributed 323 billion rand, which is 323 billion in 2013, which is essentially 11% of GDP. Now, when we compare that to the NDP forecast of 499 billion rand, for total contribution to GDP to achieve that target, it needs to grow by 7.7% per annum. Now, if you look at that table on top here, we see that on the right-hand side, growth to total contribution to GDP has been 2%. So it's been considerably below the rate that we need to go at for us to be able to achieve the 2020 target. Now, what is interesting is that domestic expenditure has actually grown by the largest percentage. If you look at on the column on the right side, we see there that it's grown by 4% per annum on aggregate 2008. And this is in response to the global recession, where the focus has really been on stimulating the domestic economy in order to buffer the tourism sector at all. Interestingly, infrastructure investment has not actually grown since 2008 on average, and in fact, it, in absolute terms, it has actually fallen. This is largely because of the slowdown in the global economy as well as the local economy. Although we do know that there's been some improvement since 2011, and this is as a result of the recovery on its way, but also at the same time, a renewed focus by government on infrastructure delivery as well. Now, this slide basically looked at the growth in employment numbers in the tourism sector. The figure on the left-hand side looks at the growth in terms of direct and indirect employment. And the figure on the right-hand side looks at the direct and indirect employment as a share of total employment in the economy. Now, we know that tourism is a labor-intensive sector and therefore significant contributor to total employment. And as you can see from the figure on the right-hand side, where its contribution was 12% in total for 2013. Now, what we did notice is that the sector did lose share jobs since the recession, and it's been trying to make up those losses over the past 5 years or so. However, if you look at the direct employment in the tourism sector, it has not yet reached the levels that it was in 2008. And this is largely because the tourism sector has been impacted as a result of the slowdown in the economy as well as the global economy.
I'm sure the economy is on
Thanks, Chair. We couldn't really see the slide. The line graph goes through the set. If you look at the one on the right, the view, it's got 5% and then it goes downwards and it's still 5%. And either the numbers are wrong or I'm not following something. In fact, every one of us says 5%, even though it forms a sort of flattish U. And our projections have told us that we haven't yet reached even the levels of 2008, but it's higher than in 2008. I don't know, maybe something wrong with the slide, or maybe I can't quite read it, but it's very hard to follow the presentation when you can't read the slides and they seem to be contradictory to each other. Possibly you can help. I mean, you can take the one about all 7%, except the one that's right touching the line. But yes, when you go from 2008 to
2011, you can see there's a very, very different trend downwards, and yet all the numbers are the same.
Thank you. Can the presenter just clear that to us, please?
Yes, let me just clarify. Okay, let me just, on the left-hand side, the graph on the left-hand side shows absolute numbers. Looking at direct as well as indirect employment in the tourist sector from 2008 onwards to 2013. This is the right side. Okay. Now, if you look at on the right-hand side, that graph shows the share of total employment for direct as well as indirect employment. Now, my apologies, Chairperson, that we didn't put it in, didn't add two decimal places to the number. So while it does look like it is the same, there is a slight decline in terms of if we had added the extra two decimal numbers, you would have seen that there's been a decline. But it hasn't been significant if you compare to the table on the right hand, the figure on the left hand side. So if we look at for example the red line, you see that the indirect contribution in 2008 was 7%. Alright. And in 2013, it is 6%. So there's been a decline from 2008 to 2011, but there's been marginal improvement since 2011 to 2013, and that is reflected in if you look at the figure on the left hand side, where you can see a similar trend but in absolute numbers. So the difference is quite marginal, and perhaps that is the reason why. For example, the figures were all the same.
Thank you. I mean, it would have helped if you had put the exact number just underneath so that we could see the slight deviation. Thank you. Question?
Thanks, Charlie. I don't want to hold up the presentation, but we studied these things before and afterwards, and it helped to get the clarification if something's not clear. I specified about the decimal points, that's a error. With respect, the second pattern is incorrect. The second slide on the right is not a percentage representation of the one on the left. They're comparing two different things. The one is total numbers in the tourism industry, right? The other one is percentage of people, or the number of people in the tourism industry divided by the total employment in the country, which is a completely different statistic. So the second slide is not a derivation of the first slide. I'm
just making that point. Please get on with the presentation. That can raise when we have question time, and that they could explain. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member. You can proceed.
Okay, this table basically compares the year-on-year income from accommodation in 2014 compared to 2013. And what we do notice is that in these 6 months, from February to July this year, there's been a positive growth in demand for accommodation, income from accommodation. While the growth has been positive, the trend may reverse, given in the coming months as a result of the cancelling of trips into Africa, as well as African countries because of the Ebola. And looking at the policy considerations, there's been a number of important policy pronouncements on the tourism sector, which basically focuses on creating of jobs. Now, we know that the National Development Plan, which is our long-term plan up until 2030, identifies the tourism sector as an important driver of growth and poverty reduction. And here, it says the target set for the tourism sector is 225,000 jobs in 2020, and direct as well as indirect contribution of 499 billion in 2020. And in the previous table early on, we did see that apart to be able to achieve that level, we need to drive a much faster rate that we are currently doing at present. Also in 2014, the state of relations address identified the tourism sector as an important driver for job creation. And here, international tourists have been identified as a focus area. The target that was set was that for foreign tourists to expand from 9.6 million in 2013 to 15 million versus in 2017. Given the revised growth forecast, that could impact on achieving that total in 2017. Also, a very important policy document that the tourism sector has to be guided by is the new growth path. And here, the tourism sector, the target in the growth path for the tourism sector is set at 225,000 jobs in 2015. So, while the NDP is looking at creating 225,000 jobs in 2020, the new growth path is looking at achieving the target in 2015. And it could be that the new growth path is a bit more ambitious and the economic environment was a bit different when the new growth path was developed. However, the starting point for the new growth path is a bit earlier, so there could be also the different target dates as well. Now, the focus in terms of the new growth path is to ensure that we have quality assurance in the sector, that we have training as well as tourism infrastructure as well as supporting cultural industries as well. Now, this basically just explains or identifies some of the salient features in terms of the intergovernmental characteristics of the tourism sector. In terms of the constitution, chairperson, tourism is as a concurrent function, legislation to 4B, which means that it's a function that is implemented at a national as well as a provincial, and also to some extent at a local government level as well. National Department sets policy for national government, and as a provincial government, we also have similar situation where provinces set the policy and strategy for their respective provinces. Now, the national department as a public entity under the within its structure, which is the national which is the African tourism entity. And this entity is mainly responsible for marketing South Africa, both local as well as internationally as well. Provincial and local municipalities have concurrent functions relating to social planning, and also at the local municipal level, municipalities are responsible for maintaining the uptake of tourism facilities and tourism board registers, tourism businesses, but also monitor the quality of services provided as well. Now, in terms of achieving the developmental agenda, the National Tourism Sector Strategy, which was passed in 2011, is an important strategy which guides the implementation for tourism, and it sets a good blueprint for the sector to achieve its developmental objectives. However, for government to be able to achieve the objectives in the National Tourism Sector Strategy, it is important for both municipalities as well as provinces to align its plans to the strategy, but also at the same time provide or make adequate provision for resources so that they are able to spend according to the objectives of the strategy. We know Chairperson that the Tourism Act was passed in 2014, and it also is a key lever to promote growth and development in the sector. Now, given the prevailing economic environment, as well as the current fiscal situation, and we know that national treasury says that there is no new money in the system, we are unlikely to see significant injection of funds in the national fiscal. So therefore, to achieve the targets in the NDP, we need to focus on identifying what are some of the strategic interventions so that it may multiply effective economy. Also, at the same time, the sector needs to leverage the favorable exchange rate in order to attract international visitors. Now, Chairperson, moving on to the departmental analysis, and here we're basically looking at trends in spending by the department since 2009-2010. But just in terms of our background, in terms of the department, it was established as a standalone department in 2009. We've mentioned that it's responsible for one public entity. There are four main programs under the department, and this is usually how the funds are allocated if you look at the budget assessment documents. Now, if you look at the departmental allocations, excluding the transfers, allocations to the department is equivalent to 23% of the overall budget in 2014-2015. And the main priority for the department is to expand domestic as well as international tourism, to create jobs, also increase the contribution of tourism to economic growth. but also at the same time digital transformation, as well as the integration of the tourism sector in the different spheres of government. In terms of financing, the department received an unconditional transfer, which is a budget that which includes a budget to the public entity, and also at the same time it received funds from the DPWD, which is a conditional grant as well. Now moving on to the spending trends of the various programs from 2019 onwards, what we noticed is that between 2009, 2010, 2013, 2014, administration has grown, there's been a significant increase in administration of 26% for 2009, 2013, 2014. And this is really in order to fill vacant posts during the period the department was establishing itself as a standalone department, and therefore it needed to mature that it recruited that sufficient resources to implement its mandate. However, what we do notice that that in all of the that over the medium term, administration is actually declining marginally. So therefore, in terms of its in terms of the allocation it's receiving, it's going up in absolute terms, but in terms of the real growth, it is actually declining. Now, if we look at the cost drivers for the period of 2009, 2010 to 2013, 2014, we know that besides administration, international tourism also increased, but that is from a very low base. So if you look at the international tourism, only received 11 million rand. And the increase is largely in order to implement bilateral and multilateral engagements, as well as the new program structure that was developed for that particular program. Now, if, over the MTA period, what we do notice that domestic tourism is the major cost driver, and this is largely as a result of new tourism incentive program to support SMEs, and also the social responsibility program, which is aimed at creating jobs through the EPWD conditional grant. Now, this this figure basically looks at the percentage share of total spending by each of the various programs, and what we notice that domestic tourism and policy and knowledge services are being prioritized over the MTA period. So we see the policy and knowledge services is the red line there on top, and then domestic tourism is the purple line just below it. And we see that over the MTA period there's an upward increase in the allocation, proportion allocation of the particular programs. Now, what we do notice is that the department is balancing consumption expenditure by marketing of tourism through the policy and knowledge services, as well as investment in enterprises for tourist, for job creation purposes through the job incentive program, as well as the social responsibility program, which is part of your domestic tourism program. Now, moving on to the line item provision of spending from 2009 onwards, what we do notice is that between 2019 and 2013-14, compensation of employees have increased by 18% in real terms. And as we reiterated previously, that is mainly to fill vacant posts in order to establish the department and implement its mandate. However, and over the MTA period, there is also an increase of 2.1%. And that is very to full post, as well as to improve conditions of service as well. Tourism services increased by 37% per annum between 2009, 10, 11, and 13, 14. But what we do notice is that there is a decline of 3.4%. And this is really in order to contain costs in the department as identified by National Treasury's medium-term guidelines. Very importantly, in terms of the department's allocation to transfers and subsidies, what we do notice is that there is also a positive increase over the MTA period, and this is really in order to provide additional funds for job creation programs, especially through the EPWP program. Now, this just goes into this just looks at the share of each of the share of compensation of employees to total expenditure, and what we see there is that the relative share of compensation of employees is declining over the medium term,
So do you think that the department has reached a level of stability? But also at the same time, the department is allocating relatively more resources to other priorities in the department as well. Now, when you look at goods and services, we see that the share of goods and services in relation to total spending over MTP has declined marginally, and that is consistent with the general policy announcements of containing costs, but also at the same time maintaining a balance with its operational requirements as well. If we look at the share of transfers and subsidies in relation to total spending, we see that for 2014-15, the transfers and subsidies received 77% of the total budget of the department. So we really see the bulk of the total spending for the department. And when you look at the share over the MTPs, we can see that it's actually increasing. This is a reflection of the department reprioritizing resources to create jobs while reducing listed resource allocations to overhead costs. Now, the Commission welcomes the strategic direction being adopted, but to emphasize that we should be careful monitoring of transfers being made and also the quality of spend that intended outcomes are being achieved. Allocations to capital assets in 2014-15 was 1%, so it doesn't really, the department does allocate minimal resources to capital assets, and this is expected to remain below 1% over the MTF period. The reason for it being able to reduce its capital expenditure over the MTF period is largely because of it managing its stock numbers, and this has a important impact on capital expenditure in terms of purchasing of office equipment and other related capital assets. Chief, moving on to the expenditure outcomes from 2010-11 to 2013-14, and this basically looks at the percentage of the total budget spent. We note that the department has improved its spending performance from 2010-11, where it spent 96% of total budget to almost completely spending its full budget in 2013-2014. When we move on to the individual programs, we see that for the administration program, it has improved its spending over the past 3 years, although in 2010-11, it was still 14% of its budget unspent. When we look at the Policy Knowledge Services program, and this is the program that receives the largest resource allocation in terms of the department's budget, we note there that the department has spent almost all of its almost its full budget over the 4 year period, and that is largely because of the allocations that it disbursed to the South African Tourism. South African Tourism has generally spent all of its allocation over the past 4 years, and this has reflected into the daily program spending its full spending close to 100% of its allocation. Now, in terms of international tourism, we note that it has consistently produced the lower spending performance of the department from 2011-12 to 2013-14. Now, while the allocation of international tourism to total spending is quite minimal, and therefore does not significantly impact the performance of the department as a whole, this does not reflect the department putting measures in place to improve alignment of budget with spending in the program. For program 4, which is domestic tourism, we see that there's been a similar trend to some of the other programs where in 2010-11 it's underspent by quite a significant amount, but then over the 4 year period it has improved its spending, where in 2013-14 it has spent close to 100% of its budget. Now, the domestic tourism program is an important economic lever to create jobs, and therefore spending in this program is quite critical for the department to be able to achieve its job creation objectives that it has set for itself. Now, when we look at some of the explanations of the variances for 2012-13 and 2013-14, what we note is that
Jimmy Weather Department, have underspent. The main reason for that has been the slow filling of vacant posts, but also at the same time the department incurring savings through our cost cutting measures as well. Now this figure, Chairperson, looks at the in-year spending profile of the department. And when we look at the spending pattern, we see there that there is a consistent pattern over 3 years. The pattern is based for all 3 years, is basically following a consistent pattern. However, if we note that there are certain months, especially April, July, October, and to a lesser extent January, which are typically high spending months, and this is largely because of the transport payments being made in those respective months to both public entities as well as households. Now, what we do note is that for 2014, disbursements in January was significantly higher than previous 2 years, which suggests that the department may have been spending relatively slower in the first 9 months of the financial year compared to previous years. Chairperson, moving on to looking at fruitless and wasteful expenditure, an amount of 2.78 million rand and 648,000 of fruitless and wasteful expenditure was reported relating to 2012, 2013, and 2013-2014. And current investigations have been conducted into these amounts of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which related largely to participation of service providers in relation to EBITDA projects in previous years. There hasn't been any irregular expenditure for 2013-14 reported by the department, and this is largely due to the department setting up a supply chain management, supply chain committees, and also capacitating these committees to deal with project administration. Chairperson, with your permission, I'll move on to the next section as it deals with the audit outcome. And the AGA has dealt with this in quite a bit in. Now, just to look at the summary of the financial assessment of the department, the commission has noted that the department has done well to achieve high rates of profit as well as spending in line with its budget. However, the biggest challenge for the department is to make sure that it gets value for money from the funds that it disperses to households as well as to public entities. And here we'd like to raise the issue of the forensic investigation that has been conducted into the misuse of funds for EBITDA projects. And then also what we would like to highlight is that this could be as a result of the lack of proper internal controls in the department and genuine monitoring and evaluation of transfer payments to public entities is quite weak in government. Also, what we do note is the funding of additional tourism infrastructure seems unclear, and we did note that the infrastructure and tourism industry has declined since 2008 onwards. There could also be an overlap of responsibilities between the African tourism as well as the department regarding the marketing of the Africa to meet domestically as well as internationally, although the budget documents don't make it clear, that really clarify the respective mandates of the entity and the department with respect to these particular functions. The department is less likely to receive an unconditional cash injection, however there are substantial grant funding available for job creation, and the department has started tapping into this funding in order to implement job creation initiatives in the department. Now, looking at the achievement of performance targets for 2013-14, the department has achieved a high rate of targets, or exceeded the high rate of targets, for all of the four programs, as you can see in that figure over there. In total, the target that has been achieved has been 88% in 2013-2014. Now, when we compare the targets that has been met to exceed with the budget trend, there's been a very close correlation between the two, which suggests that the performance target closely aligns with the work volume of the department and hence the resource allocation that is being made as well. Programs that have achieved well in terms of performance focus is your policy and knowledge services, which achieved 94%, and international tourism that has achieved 90% of its targets as well. Achieved this in many cases, when targets were exceeded, planned outputs for 2013-14 was lower than the baseline figures in the previous year. And therefore, this raises the question about whether some of the department's targets are in fact available. Also, with respect to the quality of performance indicators, it was pleasing to note that there has been a significant improvement of performance indicators since 2011-2012, and the performance indicators align much more closely with the SMART principle, which is specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, as well as time-bound. In terms of AG, it has made no material findings related to the information of the department. Chairperson, I'd just like to highlight public entities which is under the department. A significant amount of resources are allocated to public entity in the form of African tourism, and it was important just to look at this area in terms of its the department's fiscal fiduciary's responsibilities. We know that it is responsible for marketing to Africa nationally and internationally. And also to enhance service standards of tourist facilities and services. Also, another public entity that received a transfer payment, although it's not under the direct supervision of the department, is East Kitchen Park Tourism Agency, and their responsibilities are related to conservation and making sustainable use of natural resources in the Eastern Cape. When we looked at the funds that have been allocated to both public entities, we know that both public entities actually spent the full allocation, although the African Tourism received the bulk of the transfer fund. And allocation to the African Tourism is more than half of the total departmental spending in 2013-2014. So it received a significant chunk of the department's resource allocation. In terms of the Public Finance Management Act, the National Department of Tourism is the executive authority of African Tourism, and the EFU has the responsibility to monitor the performance of African Tourism. There we would just like to mention that African Tourism has received an unqualified order from the AG, as they have mentioned. But also there has been issues relating to financial matters, especially relating to supply chain management irregularities. A further issue that the AG has raised, as mentioned earlier, in terms of internal control deficiencies, which has resulted in some findings on its performance information. Chairperson, on that note, I would just like to hand over to Dr. Ramos Mabuza, who will take us through the DCC recommendation.
Thank you, Lester. Good morning, honorable members. I will just take you through the recommendations that have been made by the Financial and Fiscal Commission in the past year, the bearing on tourism. For the 2013-14 annual submission for the Division of Revenue, we made a recommendation that spoke to issues around unemployment and job creation. I think if you can move to the next slide here. And this recommendation came during the aftermath of the Great Recession, and we're looking for levers that would assist us in getting over end of the Great Recession. So what we did using analysis of which sectors have higher rates of return for Iran spend, were to identify hospitality is among some of those critical sectors that needed to be one of the main levers or engines for taking the economy out of the overhang of the Great Recession. So we recommended conscious redirection is government spending towards such activities, including hospitality. I can also mention that the food service made it into a that line of activities, as well as durable goods manufacturing and healthcare made it into that set of activities which were primed for lifting the rest of the economy out of the Great Recession. I'll come back to the issue of healthcare. It was the end because we're beginning to see the transformation playing itself out and prospects of what I think towards the end. Government accepted the recommendation, but then indicated that already they had a number of job creation initiatives that were in the pipeline. So what we are dealing with now is my colleague Alec said is going to be job creation program, including a job fund, EPWP, etc., to track whether resources have been realized to the sector, such as the hospitality sector. The second recommendation that I would want to share was done in the context of the 2009-10 recommendation, which we think is still relevant. Then, in accordance with the principles of the funded public working program, we recommended that that those job creation activities associated with expanded public works program that groups such as women, youth and people with disabilities when reporting of the outcome measures is made. The recommendation was supported, but up to now we are still grappling with finding that final grain reporting on non-financial performance indicators that talk to women, youth, and people with disabilities that have benefited from the expanded public works program for the hospitality sector, and we think that's an issue that needs to be taken up as we move forward with the budget processes. So those are the two main recommendations that are still in the pipeline for that we wanted to share with the portfolio committee on tourism. Now, as we head into the medium-term budget policy statement, I said the main issue that one for us to share. What we have been monitoring in anticipation for our submission of the medium-term budget policy statement when it does get involved were developments around striking the metal industry, and that was worrying us quite a lot. And extending the ones over the metal industry spike, one can surmise that for tourism, it's likely that demand for business travel accommodation is likely to be because the metal industry is a strong driver of business. Tourism travel and accommodation. But when one looks at the outcome for the second quarter, you will see that although the period coincided with the huge metal industry strike, the demand for accommodation was quite buoyant during the second quarter. So although the strike had a negative impact, particularly along the rest of the economy, tourism sector defined through accommodation seems to have weathered the storm of the metal strike. So we tried to think of explanations of what it is that could have been happening for the second quarter. And we think the foreign component of tourism probably took a large part of the sum by fall in domestic tourism activity. And when one looks at development in the rand depreciation for 2013 and going into January, you see quite a strong depreciation of the rand, and one can then surmise that due to relative cheapening of the rand, the foreigners continue to come and pick up slacking, therefore mask potential huge problems that could have come from domestic negative development of the rent with the strike rate flow in that window. So the main issue is that when we make our submission to government with is to continue looking for labor going forward into the FTPL. Where once they suppose they it has been the rent depreciation because the rent depreciation is not counted forever. What levers are there to cushion the tourism sector from such shocks as the metal freight industry? Then in recent few months, just like the Great Recession hit without too much notice, the Ebola crisis came onto the scene. Completely unanticipated when we were doing our lead up to the medium-term budget process. But now is definitely a real issue, particularly for the tourism sector when we go to that big policy pronouncement. Our colleagues from the Southern African Tourism Services Association have already made quite a figure that for the period of August, September to October, we've seen cancellations from foreign tourists to South Africa, but not just to South Africa, but Africa as a whole, out of a perception that the Ebola virus went to spread. So it hasn't even started spreading, but just a perception that it's going to spread has already led to certain significant cancellations. And the Southern African Tourism Services Association calls quite a big number, 1,500 Italian tourists cancelled during the third quarter planned trips to South Africa. They quote figures for people from Hong Kong, China, and Japan and Malaysia. They quote figures that cancelled. That's going to fit in the third quarter. This quarter, the performance of the tourism sector, which is critical of when we're going into the MTPPs. So, as I said, in 2013-14, we had already recommended that healthcare be a part of a redirection of spending. Now, the reason why I said healthcare, when we made that recommendation, is quite important is because many of the tourists were cancelled are handling out of the perception that the Ebola virus is going to spread. Our colleagues in the Department of Health have assured the nation that we've been in discussion with them. They say the probability of the virus spreading in South Africa is extremely based on their probabilistic calculations. And they also say if it happens, it does happen that the first case is detected in South Africa, they are ready to deal with an outbreak in Ebola when it happens. So, from our perspective, just like when the great financial crisis hit, Ebola is another external shock. And our recommendation is going to be consistent with what we say when the greater crisis, which is when an external shock hits, then you need emergency measures to deal with such external shock. Then we recommended a response, countercyclical response, but that guarantees that social spending is cushioned from the consolidation. And in the same way, because this shock particularly talks to issues around production and health, we are going to recommend emergency interventions for the physical and equitable sharing collective that talks to responding to issues around healthcare and affecting perceptions about the spread of the Ebola virus. And those speak directly to the tourism sector. When we talk about the indirect contribution to tourism, okay, one of the key levers of key underpinning sectors that underpin tourism, just like the issue of road and embargo is important to tourism. Okay, absolutely critical for tourism. So those are the recommendations from the Financial Fiscal Commission and the link into our thinking around the forthcoming medium-term budget policy statement, issues around healthcare and Ebola, issues around current depreciation, counteracting the domestic disturbances, particularly around the data tech industry, and we will make a statement around that issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, the FFC. It was very, very informative, I think. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, we have a short break of 10 minutes. I invite you to have some tea and refreshment, and thereafter we will have time for questions and clarity. Thank you.
Also, members, there's a front site on behind us, so members, those who don't want to take a tea can come forward and pick some for themselves here, including all of us. Those who don't know, we are at this mass building, fifth floor, the bathroom of this area where we are, you just go out and then is the first door on your left and right.
Thank you. I'm going to say,
Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, can we start now, please?
About the new regulations, the new bigger regulations, because that will also have a very serious impact on our ability to attract foreign visitors. And in 2013 and in 2012, the Commission warned that the Department will not meet its targets in terms of infrastructure and also attracting foreign investment and international visitors. So the same warning signals have been presented to the Department. But, Madam Chair, I would like to ask whether this commission, in its projections, whether they have, we know that the department did not do a thorough regulatory impact assessment to determine whether these new visa, to determine the impact of these new visa regulations. I would like to ask whether the department or whether the commission did, in fact, factor that into their projections, because that will also assist us in our proposal that the new biometric in-person application system would seriously impact on South Africa's ability to attract foreign visitors and investment. In fact, Trafalgar Tours recently decided not to include South Africa as a destination in any further brochures or marketing. We know that Virgin Atlantic will be cancelling their flights to Cape Town. We know that some hotel groups have already indicated a revenue loss of 2.5, this is one hotel only, of 2.5 million rand, so I can go on and on. Because ultimately the value chain in tourism is huge. And when you have regulations in place, that's going to slowly but surely kill our economy and our ability to bring in visitors to our country, then seriously that also needs to come out of this commission report, and not only BOLA, but also the visa regulations, because we need your commission's report also to show to the department and to government that we need a serious rethink of these visa regulations, and we need to go the route of electronic visas. Mauritius, for example, has taken the number one spot now in the SADC regions. Zambia has also introduced electronic visas. India will, by 2015, they'll be fully online with e-visas. So e-visa is the way to go. It will cut turnaround time, it will improve security, and it will assist with tourist facilitation. Now, the previous Minister of Tourism, Minister Van Schalkwyk, in 2013, at a parliamentary tourism summit, he raised the issue of e-visas as the way to go if we really want to meet our targets. Now, if you look at the targets that was presented to us today, in administration, there were 24 targets set, only 20 targets were met and 4 not achieved. But the one that really concerns me is the one in domestic tourism. There were 25 targets set, only 18 were achieved, 17 not achieved. And we've listened to your recommendations, and clearly there needs to be a more of a serious push from the department to ensure that we deliver on our domestic tourism projects. Now, one of those that you've highlighted is on your social spending. Now, we've dealt with this at a previous committee, but the SRI projects, that is a very serious concern to us. About 53 million rand not spent since 2011. There's been ongoing forensic investigations, but it's ultimately those communities in our rural parts of our provinces that are struggling. And that's precisely the reason of the FRI project, is to go into rural communities, develop a tourism product, and assist those communities. And there is a big problem in that regard, and that should come very strong from your report. Madam Chair, another issue that I would like to raise is that within the report there are a serious discrepancy in the table on page 57 on the SAT report. It states that there were 12.5 million domestic travelers in 2012-2013. A target of 50 million was set for 2030-2040. However, the actual achievement was only 12 million. Now, on page 60 of the Department of Tourism's report, the annual report, there is a table dealing with SAT. Now, the one column states achievements of the public entity. Now, and under that column it states increased domestic tourism in South Africa, 12 million. Now, that is in fact wrong, because if you look at the domestic tourism, it decreased by 500,000 year on year and was only 3 million then below target. So if you compare the two annual reports, the one from SAC and the one from the department, then there's a serious discrepancy in the two. And if we listen to the reports this morning, there's been unqualified audit reports and all these things, but then this is a very serious issue if these reports that ultimately become public have this particular discrepancy, because domestic tourism is the market that we need to grow, obviously international tourism, but you can't if you have visa regulations making it impossible for people to visit our country, but in any case. So the domestic tourism one is one that we seriously need to focus on, and that's the one I would like to raise with you this morning. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. The next speaker is Honourable Wexina.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have three questions for clarity for the FFC. The one is there a document, a more detailed document available with further recommendations, or is it an overview, is it a sample of a broader analysis that you've done, and is that available for the committee, and if it is, why isn't it here today? and how can we access that detailed report. The other question refers to the slide on policy considerations, and I just need to understand, when the Commission is making its recommendations or formulating its analysis of the Department, which policy document do you consider? Is it the new growth path or is it the NDP? And is it going to become, obviously there's a transitional situation happening, but are you going to drop the new growth path target when you're evaluating the Department? Because clearly there's a 5-year gap in setting the jobs target of 225,000 jobs between 2015 and 2020, and that should have, I would imagine, an impact on your recommendations. The other question was related to the second last, or third last slide, the first slide of NFC recommendations, and as I said, I would anticipate that there, and hope that there would be more recommendations for us to consider. Under unemployment and job creation, the recommendation is that government should redirect government spending towards activities that directly or indirectly create jobs through enhancing productivity performance. So the issue around productivity performance and how we're creating those jobs and sustaining those jobs. And the government's response is, government already has a number of job-creating initiatives. In my view, it's not answering the question. The question is, how do we enhance productivity performance? Now, beyond that response, that government response, how do we extract more detail? Your question was really, my understanding, focused around productivity performance, which is incredibly important. Are we as a committee satisfied with that response if that is the recommendation of the NFC? So I'd just like you to elaborate around those three questions of energy. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Whitfield. The next question comes from Honourable Masihela.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me start by commenting the Auditor General Office for the report that we have just received, and also want to monitor it. I've realized that the advice and disclaimer they are put under the same basket. Does it mean they are just anonymous or say anything? Because I thought maybe they differ in a way. But in the way you put them here, it is as if it's just one and the same thing. If maybe you can give more clarity on it. From the opinion of the Auditor General, how are the first steps done to the entities? Are we satisfied the way they are done and the way they are being monitored? Because I haven't heard you speaking anything about it. Thank you.
Thank you. It seems it is the questions are only directed towards the FSC. So I'll give you a chance now to answer and then we'll follow up with some follow-up questions.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me respond firstly to Honourable Whitfield's question and then we'll go back to Honourable Foss's question. I will hand over to my two colleagues. Now, with respect to your last question, Honourable Whitfield, in my presentation around the Financial and Fiscal Commission's role and mandate, I did indicate that the conversation that we're trying to get is between Parliament and the Executive. In terms of what Parliament has determined, that these are the policies that we want to fund, these are the priorities that we want to fund, and the Commission must then ensure that the resources are then allocated accordingly to basically respond to that. And I think I must agree with you that it is actually a pertinent question, because as you correctly say, the response sounds very benign, to say the least. It actually is a benign response. What then must happen is that we must raise that to a level where, if you say we already have this, let them get to the detail. I mean, here is the Department of Tourism. If we look at the annual performance plan, or strategic plan of the Department of Tourism, where does that actually feature? and how are we going to be and how are we going to be able to then measure that in terms of our own oversight for our own oversight purposes. So I would say that I and the Financial and Fiscal Commission will try to engage with the National Treasury around these things and say, no, but can you produce these things? And they'll probably say, no, you can check with the department and the department. But that's really not my job. My job is to say I have empowered Parliament, and this is what we have said, and government has agreed with us. The Parliament should be able to then say, how do we then exercise oversight on the event? And if you don't see the plan, then there's a problem. So I think it's a right question to ask. But probably the department, I'm sure there are some people from the department here, they might be able to say whether when government responded, it also included their own input into that particular recommendation, or they were not part of the company that responded on their behalf and they didn't have any input. But what I can tell you is that when we submit these recommendations, we make sure that every chairperson of a portfolio committee, which means every portfolio committee in Parliament, will have that submission. Every minister in government will have that submission. Every director general in government will have that submission across, whether it's at the local level or it's at a provincial level or a national level. So those are submitted to everybody. When we invite people to say, let's come and do the technical exercises so that you can look at it from a technical point of view, what does this mean? This team of mine, my research director, actually leads workshops with government officials. Some departments do send their staff, some departments don't. Parliamentary committees, some committees do send their staff, some committees don't. So this is an exercise that we really try our best to raise awareness around. Now on the second question, the National Growth Path versus the National Development Plan, I think starting from, you know, when the National Development Plan, before it was adopted by government as the guiding policy principle against which all work government must be aligned, We basically were using both the NGP, and there are some aspects of the NGP that speak quite nicely to the aspects of the National Development Plan, but there are others. For example, what Halik raised around the job, the targets on jobs, one really would, I mean, even at that particular point in time, I think the work that we were doing is such that this is probably not realistic for the time period that it's being targeted. So it turns out that there was a little bit of optimism around what the economy could do. So I think the guiding principle in terms of our work is this basically now aligning it to the National Development Plan objectives. So we measure against those. And then your first question is whether there is a document. Now, I'm not sure whether you mean around the recommendations or around the presentation that we made today. Because around the presentation that we made today, yes, we can make a web document available, but we thought since it was just a briefing, we would just come in and give you the highlights, and then you can compare with the research department, you can compare. That was just for ease of reference, but there's a need to give you the write-up of this web, whatever version, the written version of the document. We can actually supply that. There's one question that I must answer from Honorable Ford's set of questions, and that is the question, this one I can't delegate. There's a question on the impact of visa regulation. The issue of regulation is a government policy issue. And when we actually first heard about it, it was now an outcry out there that, you know, there's this regulation that has been passed that made it. Because the impact is on individuals, decisions that you have to make now around certain documentation that is required. And so this is an issue that We feel that there has to be a conversation, and I'm sure that in the tourism sector there is an impact. And it's very clear that regulation in any way, so we have to have a regulatory impact across everyone. And for us, we still require a discussion between the Home Affairs Department and the departments that are affected, including tourism. Because one would ask the question, if you pass a set of regulations and then it turns out to work in a contradictory way on another objective that as a country you have set yourself, then obviously there has not been sufficient conversation around the best way of dealing. But there are genuine issues that these regulations are trying to deal with from a migration point of view and control of borders point of view. There are real genuine concerns that need to be addressed. But then when it does have secondary impact or unintended consequences, that creates space for a conversation on how best they can actually align these things so that you don't actually impact negatively on the other objective of government. Because the priority is an equal priority of government that needs to be negotiated. So from where we sit as a commission, we haven't actually done anything in terms of sectoring in any of our projections what the impact of these regulations is going to be. Because what from the signals and messages that one gets, you get okay, the implementation is going to be with effect on that and then it gets checked. So we still are in a situation where we can say we're still uncertain about what is actually going to be the final outcome. And then we will be able to then work backwards to check that. So at this point in time, we have not actually considered, we've not created that in our, but we are actually aware, as everybody else, that there is an unintended consequence, and normally those types of decisions need to be addressed. Let me hand over to Alice. There was a question that's related to the numbers. You can just respond to that one more, then you can pick up on the bonus. Yeah,
there was a question that was raised regarding the domestic employment figures.
Domestic figures, yes.
Now, they are the official supplier of statistics regarding domestic employment figures. Is a statistical
domestic
travelers. Okay, all right. There's basically two main sources that you've got. The one is Statistics SA, and the other one is the. Go back to the slide. World Travel and Tourism Council. Now, sometimes what happens is that they will use, for example, different methodologies to calculate how these figures are actually determined. Also, in many instances, if you look at the figures going back, data institutions actually decide the methodology. So, for example, if they've calculated certain variables, for example, employment figures in 2011, they may have revised the methodology and they revised the figures as well. Unfortunately, when you look at the government documentation, quite often they don't give you the source of the data. So then you can't actually see whether it's an old reference to an old data source or which specific reference source which they've actually used. But in terms of official statistics, Statistics SA is usually the one that one should actually use, and also World Travel and Tourism Council, they are also used in the sector as well. So it could be that there could be a difference in methodology from depending on which financial you're looking at, and also different sources as well.
I'll give you a chance to engage me. Let them finish, and then she wants to say something, and I'll give you a chance.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think the issue was the discrepancy between the figure in the National Department of Tourism and the entity. That's a discrepancy which needs to be checked in that, because we can't have the entity reporting a figure that is different from the department. And at the moment, we don't have an answer that we can go and deal with the entity and the Department of Transport and then give it a feedback to the patrolling committee. Then I think the other issue that Honorable Whitfield raised was around whether there were other documents to the recommendations and statements that had been made here. For the recommendations, we have traces of other documentation that was imported today. We start with a policy brief for each of the recommendations that was spoken to, which is the 1-2 measure outlining the thrust of the recommendation. Then we have a submission document which contains the recommendation coupled with other recommendations for other departments. That we call the submission document that we table in May. Then we have a technical report, which is a chapter on each of the recommendations that appear here. And that technical report, we post it on our website. Usually comes as a big document with a column in Excel, a spreadsheet. But we are quite happy to share electronically with you those documentation. But the airport of call would most likely be the website we post that. Then a honorable airport, your other element of the domestic tourism, is to actually buy into your thought process around the importance of a domestic component of tourism. One of the things that we did is that when we addressed the impact of the land appreciation on tourism in general, there's another angle that talks to domestic tourism that can be a big advantage when we interpret the overall outcome that portfolio committee members may actually be interested in, given that this is a portfolio committee on tourism. When the land depreciates, it not only brings foreign tourists, because South Africa is a cheaper destination for them, but what it does is for our high income end of domestic tourists that we have chosen, it's foreign destination for tourists. It means foreign tourism is now more expensive for them because they need more funds to finance foreign travel. But those people have a high demand for tourism. So if they can't travel abroad, the next nearest substitute for them is to visit a domestic site. And so part of what was ameliorating the effect of the federal strike was actually high-end South African tourism substituting away from foreign tourism towards domestic tourism because they couldn't afford to go abroad because the rand was depreciated. So the rand depreciation for tourism doesn't play such a double-edged sword as it does for other sectors. But for tourism, it has this reinforcing positive effect, which is always just to look so when you are negotiating now in your PR as opposed with other committees, say looking purely on economics, the issue of position on the land depreciation, I think is more likely need for portfolio contract tourism, but it could be a double edged sword for other portfolio committees that one needs to negotiate separately. Then the Etherlife project, we haven't assessed it from the commission perspective, but looks like that our budget analysts need to pick up on that project and see where this bottleneck that you are is picking up. And for me now they can be, but we haven't looked at it, particularly as a standalone project, because we tend to look at issues if they are placed the intercenter and the three-sphere setup. I would just mention the other element that was implicit in the Jefferson's statement, which is that if a portfolio committee, because we report to you, it is still strongly that there is an issue that you require the commission to work on and then to come back and report to you the commission after doing detailed research. That's precisely what the FSC Act says, that the portfolio committee makes that request in writing exactly on what it wants the commission to look at and come back at a later date to report on independent findings around that particular issue, as long as they are in our mandate. And the issue of socialism to fit quite nicely into informing our work plan, we will come in report on a specific issue that is visually beneficial. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan from AG. You want to respond also that?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know whether I can respond, because I wanted to talk about the discrepancy in the two reports, but there were also other questions that were raised. Can I continue with both of them? In terms of the discrepancy, I also don't have the two documents with myself. I've also concurred with the department. I will go back and we will look at those and then see, for example, where the discrepancies are, because I know that in one of the examples that I used, some of the information that's available from stats is incorrect, so they might not have taken all of that into account. So I'll get back to you on that, because I can't, if I would be giving a reply now, I don't think it would be the accurate one. Then just to get back to the other members' question regarding the adverts and disclaimer. If I could take you to the actual slide where I think the indication is coming from, and it's basically the one in the pack. We do talk about an unqualified, I'll give you the definition. An unqualified audit report is when we look at the financial statements and we say that they were basically accurate and the there are no material adjustments to the financial statements, and it's a true reflection. One needs to also take into account that we do our audits on a sample size, so we do not do 100% testing. So in terms of what we tested, we came to the conclusion that the financial statements were a fair representation. When you look at qualified, basically we get under qualified, we get three different versions. We get a qualification, which is a qualification basically on an aspect where, for example, we're looking at assets and we say that we couldn't verify that all the assets were there. The asset register is a mess and the department or the entity cannot correct it to give us the assurance that what they have is reported. Either the asset on there or we've got a problem regarding that. Then we qualify just based on the assets in total. When we look at an adverse opinion, that's basically where we say the set of financial statements that are given to us, we just, I don't want to say that was rather short, but there were just too many errors and they cannot make the corrections to that. So basically, we are then saying we disagree. That's what the adverse is. We disagree with the set of financial statements. And when we look at the disclaimer, that is basically where we've requested documentation and we do not get the documentation, so we call that a scope limitation, where we say our scope is limited because we didn't get all the information to allow us to be able to audit, and then we could disclaim in total, or we could disclaim, for example, on assets, if that's just an example that I'll use. Then we look at the audits that are to define low with no findings and with findings. When you have with no findings, that means that they were basically clear. We can have an emphasis of matter paragraph where we say, for example, in the department's one, where they receive an exemption from the modified cash basis. That's just to give clarity to the user out there that if they see that
there was a deviation, that they were allowed to do it, and we were fully aware of it. So that's basically what we do there. And then in terms of WIF findings, that's normally where we're looking at the compliance issue, where we say that there were matters that we raised in terms of compliance. Those compliance matters could be supply chain management, it could be not compliance with the immigration employing of foreign nationals, for example. It could be non-compliance with transfer payment requirements. Those are the sort of examples that we would then use there. So they don't get a clean audit, they get the qualification, but they have gone along and they've done the correct disclosure and in their financial side of it. As far as the AOCI side of it, we do the pre-determined objectives. We are still not issuing an opinion on that. We are still only concluding in our management report on that. But we bring that in under the heading where we say we didn't find anything in terms of reliability and usefulness. So you're basically getting the idea of what our conclusion or audit opinion will be in the future. So I hope that clarifies that matter as to how we actually report. Then there was another question done on how transfer payments are done and how they are monitored. From the department budget, basically, as we saw, there are really three areas of transfer. The one transfer is the transfer that they make to South African tourism to allow them to be able to function. The other one is in terms of the Eastern Cape, where they basically, where you're looking at that in terms of the job expo, sort of, because it's a very specific criteria that is set there. And then we're looking at the favourite topic, which is the Gander Public Works project that we then also reviewing. In terms of those, there are certain criteria that needs to be put in place and the transfer criteria are then looked at. For South African tourism, when they need to receive the money, they need to comply with certain requirements which they then submit to the department and the department then makes the funds available to them. They're looking at certain ways of making the funds available to South African tourism as well in because they used to only get it at certain times in the year, but now because of the loss in the rand, when you transfer any later, so you actually find out that the loss, the amount of buying power that you get, you still got a million rand, but you're not getting the half same amount in pounds or euros or whatever, you're actually losing money by keeping it within South Africa. So they're going through a whole process of being able to ensure that we don't devalue the money if that's SAT getting, because SAT needs to still send exactly a certain amount in euros and in pounds and dollars. So I think that that's just, that's but they need to show the departments as well that they have used the money in the correct way. Then in terms of expanded public work, I think this is a topic that even the previous portfolio committee has been looking at, because it is a crucial one. It's the empowerment of previously disadvantaged communities to be able to come to the fore. I know that the one comment was that there have been forensic investigations that have been going on for a number of years and what's the outcome of that. In 2009, actually when the department started and the new DG came in, the split was made between the environmental affairs and the tourism, and they walked across from environmental affairs the tourism-related expanded public works program. The way it normally works is the first payment is done, the first transfer, because they previously disadvantaged. They can't come like a normal engineer or, you know, your Marion Roberts and that and stuff. We will do a whole lot of things because they don't have the money up front. So they get an initial payment, but then to continue, they need to come back with project plans and saying how they spent the money. Initially, when we first started doing the audit, we did raise problems with all the documentation not necessarily being readily available because they need to have audit reports, they need to have progress reports, they need to have a site visit. So there are criteria in place that need to be implemented. The current DG then raised this as a high priority and went out and did a lot of visits. And from that, as well as our involvement at that point, we identified where bridges that were involved, where houses didn't exist, and that's where the forensic investigation took place. What they then did is they handed it over for criminal, because the people have actually used the money of that. So it is in the process of a criminal side of it. The spending, I know at one point from agency side, they were saying that there was a dip in the spending. That was really in a whole lot of the investigations that were being taken place, but you'll notice that now it's picking up because they've put in place a lot of additional control that aren't only the normal ones for the EDWP transfers. So in what we do from our side is, I know we're not engineers, we're not the people that can really go out and do that, but the department itself is employing, getting engineers on board to go and have a look and assess whether our house is 80% complete, because all of us wouldn't be able to necessarily be able to do that. So we do site visits, and we also look at documentation, look at the audited reports on the funding of it. So from our side, we we look at the criteria that's been involved. And as I say, the department has put additional criteria in place, and I think that looking at it now, the spending on it has started to increase. So I don't know whether that answers from what the side that we do, you know, we make sure that the money is being correctly transferred to us.
Thank you. There's a follow-up question. Unfortunately, time is running out, but I will give you the opportunity to close.
Yeah, I'll try to be quick then. One more question for clarity, allowing us to some of you heard. The stats over the years for tourism indicate that 75% of the tourist volume is domestic, 25% is international, in social aid programs, things like that. So I need a bit of help on the figure that we've been talking about, that the two reports don't quite coalesce on the 12 million internal tourists. If we are now getting just over 10 million international tourists, and by definition, there should be 30 million internal tourists, so that would be 75%. Am I missing something? Is it because it's on rand value, or what actually is the definition? That's the first question. Second one is on what I just heard from the Department of the AG. I don't understand how year after year after year, and that's the fiscal portfolio committee for many years, we hear about money that's been paid for projects, but then the bridges aren't built or the houses aren't built, as you just said. How is it possible that people can be paid in advance for work they haven't done? I ask that because before I became a Member of Parliament full-time, I must have built 40 to 50 houses myself. And I did it all on loan finance. And there was an inspector from the bank who went out, looked at the house or the bridge, whatever the case may be. Depending on what you're given to do that project, they would assess what percentage of the value was there. They worked out how much money you would do. That's what they really paid you, and that's all you got. They never ever go to a situation where they pay out more than the value of the work done. And yet, year after year, we find these things incurred in this committee and others, that work, in fact, is not commenced. Money's paid out, and then there's a turnaround strategy, and then there's additional controls put in. I guess there's some clarity how this can happen, where it is best practice and has been so for a century in the private sector. What is actually going on? That money can be paid out before the work is done.
Thank you, Honourable Member. AG or FSC, I give you positive. I'll get you.
I don't know that you're talking on behalf of the department, but basically, and I hear what you're saying, and it is a thing to be saying that in the normal private sector, we would not be doing that. But the whole idea with this was that it was a social initiative that was started. And being an auditor myself, I also wanted to see progress and then see the money only being paid out, and it took a bit of a mind shift from my side as well. It is a social initiative, empowering people, and it's a job creation initiative that is there to empower previously disadvantaged people, and these individuals wouldn't have the funding. They can't go to the bank to get that funding. So it's broken up into two payments, basically. So they get an initial starter amount of money, of which they then need to do a progress report again. So that is the rationale behind it, but I'm sure that the department as well would be able to put more emphasis onto where it is going. But that was the way the EPWP projects were started. So there are flaws in it, but we need to, those are the measures against which it's measured. But I hear, and the department that is hearing what you're actually saying all along, because that would prevent the having to go and track the money after it's already been spent.
Thank you, honourable members and ladies and gentlemen. I would like to thank you, ladies and gentlemen from the FSC and from the Auditor General. Both presentations in my mind were very good. And I say that against the fact that I had presentations from, I'm in the Portfolio Committee of Public Works, and to see on our net not satisfied. My book, those entities, when they gave us information in public books. But this morning's presentation, I really, really enjoyed. Thank you very much. Keep up with your work. And National Department of Tourism, you are here. And SAT, you are here. You heard, but you are not here. But next week, we'll come with a block to you. Yeah, we are informed now. Thank you very, very much. And as for the portfolio committee, we must still do some work. So I would appreciate it if we just 10 moments or 15 moments. Thank you very much.
Is that you pay the risk to the contractor,
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. And I knew you said you had something. Thank you. Our next item is the third term committee program. Has everyone of you got a copy of the program? The secretary will take us through.
We've got in front of us the program that we will be following for the last remaining few weeks from now up to November. Today, Chair, as we have just already met with the Office of the AG and the Auditor General, the FFC and the Auditor General, we also intended also to put the National Treasury as well on the program. Unfortunately, they declined our invitation. In any event, we have agreed with them that we still require a meeting with them even after it is after the BRR process. Then next week, on Friday the 24th, and then we will have that meeting with the National Department plus the South African Tourism on the same page. We anticipate, Chair, that members will bear with us because we anticipate that meeting may run up to 2 o'clock or after 1 o'clock. So that's just we want members to be aware of that so that when you do your flight bookings and so on, at least you can take that into consideration. That meeting will be in the venue next door and in the same building, but the conference room next door, which is much bigger. That briefing of the NDP plus the SAT presenting their annual report. And then the following Friday, Chatterton, on the 31st of October, we intend at least by that time to have a draft report on the BRR, which we will be tabling to the committee. And that meeting will be in our old venue, Committee Room B119, which we will be presenting to the committee, including the recommendations and all of that we will be tabling. The following week, number 4, the week of Friday, the 7th of November, we've got an invitation here from AXA, where they are inviting the committee to have some interaction with them. Because they said they want to have a short guided tour at the Cape Town International Airport. What we proposed to the chairperson is that we think for us to coordinate that visit correctly, we need to look at the date that will coincide with the committee day, which is on a Friday, where we will meet them in the morning and have that session from 9 o'clock up to 12. They will brief us on whatever that they want to brief us on. Then we will have that guided tour. And then thereafter, members who will be flying out of Cape Town, then they can just check in with their luggage and go to their respective provinces. So that is what we're proposing. And then the following Friday, that Friday of November 14, we intend also to invite the Tourism Business Council so that we can have some interaction with them. They can raise whatever they want to raise with the committee, because there are a number of issues that are coming up from the business sector. So we want to have that engagement with them on that Friday of the 14th of November. That meeting will be here in Parliament. And then the following Friday, the Friday of the 21st November, That one said we also intend to have a meeting with the local government and cooperative government and traditional affairs, the COFTA. Because what we want to check basically with them, we want to check the support that they are providing to municipalities in respect of tourism. And also the intention again of that meeting, we are meeting them because in preparation of the 2015 local government tourism that is organized by the National Department of Tourism. That conference will be next year, early in February. So in preparation for that, we also want to get some sense of from the local government as to what are the challenges are there and why in some instances the tourism is not prioritized at the local level and all of those things. So that work will be in preparation for that conference. Because if we don't do that, it's unlikely that we can be able to meet with them again before that local government conference, which will be in next year. As of now, we are still waiting for the department to provide us with some details, some specific dates, and all of that. But I am aware that the February has been confirmed. It's only the specific dates that have been outstanding. There's also an overdue oversight that we were supposed to undertake as the Portfolio Committee of Tourism to the headquarters of the National Department in Pretoria. Some time ago, it was reported to us the department was unable to employ people as much as they can because they didn't have a space, they didn't have accommodation, and so on. So we were saying that because Parliament has allocated the 25th of November up to the 28th of November to committees of Parliament to undertake their to do their oversight work. We were proposing that to the chair, we need to use those dates. We can go to Pretoria, we can visit the SAG in their offices, they can brief us, and then we can go to the National Department, we can have a briefing, and part of that briefing that they were making to us, we must also ask them to present the quarterly report, both quarter 1, 2014-2015, and quarter 2 of 2014-2015. And that meeting we'll have with them in their head offices in Pretoria. Although we are still working with it in consultation with the chairperson, because we also want to do what we are there, also to engage the monitoring and evaluation department in the presidency, so that they can take us through of this oversight model that they are using in terms of monitoring the department, the government departments, and so on. But that matter has not yet been finalized. We are still in interaction with the chairperson. As soon as this program is approved, then we will put that in, and then we will also in our work when we are in Pretoria and have the time, whether we will be meeting with them in whatever hotel we will be using, but we'll also like to engage them further. If I can also add, the attitude of the new chair of this committee is that biannual reporting of the department on financial and on performance and financial. Chairperson's view, she wants to do away with that. She wants the department, National Department of Tourism and the SAG, she wants them to report it to the committee on quarterly basis. So this meeting that we'll be having with them, say, I'm sure it might be enough. Then thereafter, from next year, then the department can come to the committee and report it after of every 3 months. So basically, those are the brief proposals, the chairpersons, that we are taking to the committee. We solicit the support of the committee so that we can communicate together with whoever that would need to communicate from immediately after this meeting, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bonatina. Honorable members, this is a draft program. So, can I have a proposal? Proposal? By citizens? Honorable folks, make it official, please. You're nodding your head, but make it official.
Move or second?
Record.
On the record. Right, for the record, I agree to the program. Second, move, propose.
So you move by Honorable Ford. And the seconder? Honorable Matayala. Thank you very much.
I didn't really go to the same, I was there to study, but the same slide as me to Mr. Queenie. And he said to me that he's aware that we meet on a Friday, but that he also had instructed in his official capacity all the committee chairs that could not be a permanent arrangement, and they would have to at some point swap around to Tuesday or Wednesday. Is there any clarity on that? As to how long the Friday arrangement is going to continue and when we'll go back to Tuesday and someone else takes the Thursday and Friday committee.
You put me on the spot. I'm just here for today. But I think what you are saying, we're all feeling the same. So that's a process. And to say on the Sonic has the same view as us. We'll see what happens in the future. Thank you. Anyway, for raising it with you. Honourable members, our last item on the agenda is the minutes of the portfolio committee, Friday the 19th of September. All of you got a copy of this? Honorable Coram Rapuk, you gave the recut and they were lost for that. Was from a guest on the program. We have the minutes before us. Can I have a second to take us through if there's any... you have read it. I assume you have read it. Except for Honorable Coram. Secretary, take a few minutes, please. Page 5, just correction. And as we go page by page, just note if there is things that will change, please.
Certain terms, Sharon, as you have indicated, these minutes are the outcome of the are the minutes of the meeting that we had with the National Department of Tourism, where they were briefing the committee on the National Heritage and cultural tourism strategy. Not sure in terms of attendance, I'm sure all members have been captured. Those who were not around, their apologies that were sent to the office, we recorded those apologies. Unfortunately, Honorable Kosa, we didn't receive your apologies, and even Mr. Rose was not in as well to stand for you. I'm sure that's why you will see that you are not there. You can check with the secretary in your office because he didn't submit anything. In terms of the National Department attendance, is there, and page 1 is just an introduction and overview, Chair. Then 3.1 is a presentation overview, and then page 3, the implementation process. And then page 4 are the committee deliberation, and then page 5 is just the consideration of the minutes of the 12th of September. So I'm not sure if whether or whether to remember that there are any issues that they want to raise. If not, then it was moving for the adoption and for the second agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Consumer. Members, any corrections? Let us go page by page. Page 1. Page 2. I know you're not. Page 3. Page 4. Specifically look at the committee deliberations and the resolutions. I think it's very important. Page 4. Page 5. Nothing has changed. Can I ask for a mover and a seconder?
I move.
You move. And you support. Can I have a mover? And a seconder? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, honourable members, for supporting me this morning, and thank you to the support staff for supporting me. This meeting is adjourned.
Yeah.